Boys and girls, I have a promise for you. This is our last podcast in which we will speculate who the Bears might draft, could draft, should draft, will consider drafting. This is it. It's our final pre-draft podcast. Next time you hear from us, we'll be talking about the new Bears, the rookie class for 2016. But this is a very cool podcast. I'm really excited. Our guest on the show today is going to be Stephen White of SB Nation. He's a former NFL player. He's been writing really good breakdowns of these prospects, specifically guys that are on the Bears' radar. So we'll talk to him in just a couple minutes. At the end of the show, I have a 7-round Bears mock draft, 9 picks in the 7 rounds. I expect 0 of them to be correct, but we'll talk about it. I am Kevin Fishbane, by the way. Follow me on Twitter at KFishbane. Got my producers here, Dan Mott at Mott's Thoughts and John Solly at JSolly. And we'll kind of preview our draft coverage. We got a lot of fun stuff at ChicagoFootball.com and ProFootballWeekly.com in the coming days. We are recording this just a few days before the NFL draft. We'll hear from Ryan Pace on Wednesday, and I'm sure he'll tell us nothing. I was thinking about making a bingo card of all the different things that Ryan Pace is going to say in his pre-draft press conference, but you know, it's every GM says the same thing. They want playmakers, they want difference makers, and they want guys who are high character and that will be good in the building. They're going to take best player available. So we're going to get bingo with Ryan Pace in his pre-draft press conference on Wednesday. One of those players that the Bears might take, will take, should take, was likely written up in an awesome draft breakdown on SB Nation by our guest on today's podcast. It is Stephen White, former NFL player, now writes for SB Nation. You can follow him on Twitter. I highly recommend it, SGW94. Stephen, I bring you onto the show with the same way I've brought on our last few guests. Congratulations, we are almost there. It is almost a draft. We can finally stop speculating.
Yeah, you know, that's probably my least favorite part of this whole process is you kind of have to start guessing, but there's no way to know what's going on in all the war rooms around the league. So it really is just a speculation. So I'm more of just a nuts and bolts guy. Let me look at the tape and tell you what I see. But I understand why, you know, you have to have all these mock drafts and stuff like that. But next week, all of that is over with because finally we'll actually see who they really do like.
Yeah, and I wanted to, before we talk about some of the players that you've broken down the tape on, I wanted to get a little bit more on that. You know, as you mentioned, you spent some time in the NFL. You were a 6th-round pick back in 96. And now coming at it from this angle, where you're writing about these players, you guys have a podcast at SB Nation, really fun over there with Ryan Van Bibber. And what is kind of maybe a misconception that you see based on your experience in the league, in these buildings, between the way that we talk about draft prospects and maybe the way that NFL teams view them? Is there something that we sometimes overrate or underrate when we talk about them that NFL coaches see differently from your perspective?
Maybe the biggest thing is the fact that so many times people talk about prospects in the context of how they played in college. And the draft is all about projecting how they'll play in the pros. So you have these guys who are very productive on the college football level, but maybe they don't project to be that good of a player in the NFL. And so many fans, especially, you know, they focus on, well, this guy made All-American or that guy made All-Conference. Why isn't he rated higher? Well, that's because he had the size and strength that you need to play college football, but maybe he's not quite as tall or his arms aren't quite as long as you want him to be for a player in the NFL. And so, like I said, that's the part that I think that involves the most arguing, I think. You know, fans, especially team fans, if that particular player went to the school that they attended, they tend to be very defensive about him anyway. But, you know, I think that's coming around. I think people are getting more and more knowledgeable about the process. And so I actually see a lot of more smarter fans out there right now.
Well, that's good. That helps everybody out when people have a better idea of how this process works. But it's such an intricate process. It's always a big puzzle. And let's start breaking down some of these guys And for folks listening, please go check out Steven's breakdowns at SB Nation. If you go to his Twitter at SGW94, he's got a link there to his page, and you can read all these. And I want to start, Steven, with the offensive tackles. Now, you played defensive end, so you have a really good idea about what it takes to be a good offensive tackle. And Bears fans really are excited about the possibility of Ronnie Stanley being there at 11, Notre Dame being close to Chicago. A lot of folks know him well. And you wrote that, I mean, you would take him over Laramie Tunsil. So what is it about Ronnie Stanley's game that really stands out to you that is better maybe than Tunsil's game?
He is a premier pass blocker on the edge in college football. And you just don't see very many guys who are as adept at doing that one particular thing as Ronnie Stanley is. Now, he's not really the run blocker that Laramie Tunsil is. He's not the run blocker that a lot of these other guys are. But when you look at the league and what we're going to these days, it's much more of a passing league than it's ever been before. Your left tackle is great if he can, you know, get you a couple of pancake blocks a game. But in all reality, if that guy can't pass block, he's not going to last very long. So I'm looking for guys who can protect my quarterback, my high price. You know, these guys are making $16, $17, $18 million nowadays. I have got to protect that investment. So for me, Laramie Tunsil showed a lot on film. But Ole Miss didn't ask him to do a whole lot of one-on-one pass blocking. And when he did it, he looked good most of the time. But there were a couple occasions, particularly against some of the better pass rushers he faced, where he didn't look all that great. Was Ronnie Stanley, even when he went against Shaq Lawson, which I think that was probably the battle of the Titans of the season for him, you know, he still looked pretty good. You know, you're not going to look great against a pretty good pass rusher, but he more than held his own. And so for me, I put more value on being able to protect the passer. And you know, you guys have Jay Cutler there, and you have a need pretty much at both tackles, I would say. But you know, definitely you have Charles Leno, who started last year, to mixed results. I actually watched him a little bit to prepare for this podcast. I happened to turn on the last game of the season against the Lions, and yeah, Ezekiel Ansah gave him the business a little bit. So I'm sure that's part of why the fans there are kind of excited about maybe getting a guy like Ronnie Stanley. And I do think he will be a good fit for the Bears.
Yeah, you know, the Leno thing's very interesting, Steve, because Ryan Pace has said a lot of nice things about Charles Leno. He's gone out of his way to say it, and now there's a lot of smoke screens, as you know, that go on at this time of year, but I think a lot of people are wondering, when push comes to shove, if Stanley's there, and I'm going to get to Jack Conklin in a second, what they're going to do. One more question about Stanley. You know, you talk about how he doesn't have maybe that mean streak that some offensive linemen have, and certainly Conklin has, and we'll get to that in a moment. And I was talking to somebody, a former personnel guy, who said about Stanley, that's his biggest fear. What's he going to do when he's in an NFL building when he just doesn't have that, he doesn't show that on tape necessarily, that he's going to throw guys to the ground? As someone who's in these NFL locker rooms but also watching the tape, how much does that really matter? And how much can you tell about a guy that might be missing that, but maybe he can just get it when he's in an NFL building with the right coaching staff?
Well, again, you know, I understand why people have that inclination to gravitate to the guys who are pancaking people all over the field. And there was a time, you know, in the NFL when the emphasis was really on the running game or what have you, and really you needed those road grader types along your offensive line. My thing is this: he's already, you know, not necessarily the most aggressive guy as a run blocker, but you see perfection almost from him as a pass blocker. So at the end of the day, you know, I bring up Greg Robinson a lot because he was one of my favorite players that I wrote up my first year writing for SB Nation, these draft breakdowns. I mean, athletic guy, nasty, you know, just trying to pancake everybody. But you know what? People don't talk about him very highly just yet because even though he's still a pretty good run blocker, he's having some troubles with his pass blocking. And that's the way we define left tackles, especially in this league right now. You can be the best run blocker you want to be. If you can't pass block out on the edge, that's going to be a problem. So I don't really care. I've seen too many guys who weren't necessarily you know, the rah-rah, I'm going to rip your head off guys, still be very good players to know that it takes all kinds. And so if this guy, this kid, Stanley, doesn't have that kind of demeanor, but he's still that good as a pass blocker, I'll take him, like I said, 7 days a week and twice on Sunday over Tunsil.
Yeah. And let's move on to Conklin, who's, you know, if Stanley's gone and Conklin's there at 11, I think, you know, that's another option for the Bears. I loved your headline there, he will cockroach a man. And it was fun reading the way you, you know, showed the watching of Jack Conklin, because you kept kind of going back and forth. You saw this on tape, then you saw the measurables of the combine. What do you see there in terms of what's missing between what he did in Indianapolis versus what you saw on tape that maybe makes you wonder if he, how good of a left tackle he could be in the league?
Awful technique. Mm-hmm. This guy, see, you look at him at first and he looks awkward out there trying to block, especially if you just got through watching a guy who's very smooth like Ronnie Stanley. And so he, you know, he's all herky jerky and, you know, it's like, man, this guy looks terrible. But then you notice that, well, there aren't many guys beating them, though. And so it took a couple times watching it and then looking at the measurables. I'm like, this is an athletic guy, right? He shouldn't be looking this awkward out there on the edge. It turns out it's his technique. He's actually, in college, he was excelling despite his technique rather than because of it. So he might be late dumping out on a speed rusher. But some kind of way he finds a way to still make the block because he's athletic enough to get back there. Or he oversets a guy and maybe opens up his inside. One thing he did that was just awful is he turned his shoulders perpendicular to the line of scrimmage almost immediately after the snap of the football. And that does two things for offensive linemen. One, it makes a shorter corner for your speed rushers. So we love to see this anyway in an offensive lineman. And then when you get him bailing out of there, it opens up his inside tremendously. So basically a guy with his kind of technique, normally you expect to see getting beat play after play after play. But Conklin, whether it was because of his athletic ability and or his attitude, just wasn't going to let guys get by him like that. So what I think is once he gets on the next level, there's probably going to be one or two options. Either his technique is still kind of flawed for the rest of his career, where and in that situation, I think you put him at right tackle, and then he gives you a guy over there who's going to be strong as a run blocker, give you some attitude on the offensive line, and is good enough to face most of the guys rushing over there. Or if his technique, if you can get him with a real good offensive line coach and kind of brush up that technique and get it cleaned up, I think this guy can be a very good left tackle in this league.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a fascinating offensive tackle draft. And, you know, what's great about your breakdowns is that you're able to pick out, you know, these nuances within their game that makes them different. Should be interesting how they fall within the first round. Let's get to the other side of the line. Let's get to the defense because, you know, here in Chicago, Bears are thinking defense. They're looking at guys who could play five technique, you know, in that 30 front, maybe an outside linebacker. So I got, let's say I got five guys for you, Steve, that you've broken down all these guys. Let's start with DeForest Buckner. I think he is the dream for Bears fans. I actually mocked him to the Bears a couple weeks ago because if three quarterbacks and Elliott go in the top 10, there's a possibility that Buckner is able to fall to 11. And with his size, you know, and the speed, he's got to be one of the more unique players you've seen that can play inside. Is that kind of a fair way and to describe that? And then how would that translate, you think, to the NFL?
Yeah, he's definitely a unique guy. And when I did the breakdown on him, I actually, instead of comparing him to one guy, I compared him to a bunch of different guys. Like, you know, he's got the size of a guy like Julius Peppers, for instance, but he's not quite as athletic as Julius Peppers. So I went through and talked about guys maybe he was athletic as, or maybe he looked like this guy in the running game and looked like this guy as a pass rusher. He's just this like mismatch of all these different good NFL players. And what you see is just a ton of potential. He's going to have to get a little bit better as a pass rusher, get a little bit better with using his hands. But he's not just tall. This dude is he's a load. He's just so strong and powerful. When you watch him on tape, he's tossing guys out of the way, man. It's really impressive. And then he's athletic enough. He might not be, you know, your 4'6" guy or something like that, but he's athletic enough to actually win pretty much up and down the line of scrimmage. What I would liken him to is a guy, the defensive tackle for the Broncos who just signed with the Jaguars.
Malik Jackson,
mm-hmm. You know, not in physical stature, but in the way you could use him. And I could just envision, you know, once again, getting him with some good coaching so that his technique gets better and just moving him up and down the line and letting him whoop guys. I mean, he really could do that. Kind of like Malik Jackson. You saw Malik Jackson play some defensive end, three technique all over the place. And he's going to be really hard for people to block once he gets some technique. I think his arms are like 36 inches long or something crazy like that. He's 6'7" anyway. So he's just a big, strong, powerful guy who needs some technique work. And he's going to have to learn how to play a little bit lower at times as well because, of course, he's 6'7". But I actually think his pad level, I say his pad level is a little better than some people are saying. I've seen him against that Stanford offensive line that nobody likes to go against get lower than the offensive tackle and push him back on a short yardage play. So I can see why they would be excited to have him in Chicago. And look, y'all got a bunch of guys who can rush around the edge. I love Willie Young. I'm a Willie Young fan. I was kind of actually mad that it took them so long to kind of work him back into the rotation last year. And Pernell McPhee, mm-hmm. like I'm not saying he's the best, but I don't know that I like to watch anybody rush, pass rush, more than I like to watch Pernell McPhee rush. So if you can get a guy like DeForest Buckner in there inside to complement those wide rushers, Lamar Houston is in the mix too, those guys, you got something special, especially in that 3-4 defense that you're running now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the phrase that you hear a lot is that, you know, the idea of somebody putting an offensive lineman on skates, and I feel like Buckner does that sometimes right off a snap where he's able to just get right into a guard with that strength you talked about. And speaking of strong, I mean, A'shaun Robinson from Alabama, that guy's just an ox, it seems. And you look at him in person and you can't believe he just turned 21. He's probably the guy that's been mocked to the Bears the most. Now, Steve, you'll have a great insight into this, and I did a little bit of a breakdown on A'shaun a week ago, and I immediately heard it from Bears fans. He doesn't get enough sacks. He's not quick enough. He doesn't get after the passer. Now, we have to remember, Bears fans are still getting used to the 3-4 defense and you know, what it takes to play that five technique, to play defensive end in this. You know, everyone here is so used to the 4-3, so they're still getting acclimated to it. But from A'shaun Robinson, what is it for you that you really like that he could be a good player at the next level?
Now, see, A'shaun Robinson is more of the traditional five technique guy, right? Yeah. Not the guy that moves up and down the line. He's the guy that kind of, you know, he's over the tackle most of the time. It's just a matter of, is he head up on the tackle? Is he a little bit outside? Is he a little bit inside? That's where you're going to find A'shaun Robinson on the next level, especially if he plays in a 3-4 defense. And that guy's just, he's big and strong. He might at times look even stronger than DeForest Buckner on the field. Now, I don't know, you know, with the 220 reps or 225, who did the most or something like that. But, I mean, you just see A'shaun Robinson tossing guys all around. And he's played the position. You know, he's done this in college in a 3-4 at Alabama. So where I would say that he's a little bit further behind Buckner is on the pass rush ability, sure. But he's got all of the intangibles that tell you that all he needs to do is get with somebody who's going to teach him with a couple more moves. You know, he's trying to figure out how to pass rush as a two-gap guy. And you know, he didn't always look great at it. But I think, you know, you see the quickness at times, especially against the run. You know, not necessarily as a pass rusher, but against the run, you see the quickness that you would think he needs to be a really good pass rusher. It's just that, you know, he needs a little bit of work with his technique. But I think, you know, he's a big, strong guy. He's not 6'7", but I think he's like 6'5", what have you. That dude... For a traditional 3-4 defense, okay, he's going to hold the point. He's going to be a menace against the run. And really and truly, it's a plus where you get pass rush out of a five technique anyway. You know, that's usually not really a big time pass rush guy. And most of the time they're going to be lined up in positions that aren't conducive to pass rushing anyway. So, you know, DeForest Buckner is somewhat of an anomaly. Anyway, if you get A'shaun Robinson, he's probably going to be in the league for 7 or 10 years, and he's going to give you some good play on the field. I don't think Bears fans should be disappointed at all if they get him.
Yeah, well, as you've probably learned now in your 3 years writing for SB Nation, fans are never satisfied with anything. But, you know, and so two more players here on defense with Stephen White of SB Nation. Follow him on Twitter at SGW94. Shaq Lawson is really interesting to me because I've seen a lot of quote-unquote draft experts mock him to the Bears. I watched him 2 days ago, Steve, and he kind of actually reminded me of Pernell McPhee with how strong he is, and their measurables are pretty similar. And what the Bears need at outside linebacker is speed more so than power, because they get that from McPhee, they get that from Lamar Houston. So I'm trying to see where Shaq Lawson fits, because he's not – that, but then you wrote about this. He had a pretty good 40 time and 20-yard shuttle. So where do you see Shaq Lawson fitting, and what did you like about his game from watching him?
Well, see, with McPhee, like you say, he's more of a power guy. So you're going to find him over by, you know, on the tight end side a lot. So as you said, the other guy opposite him should kind of complement him and be more of a speed guy. But it doesn't have to be, you know, a guy that runs a 4-5 and just blazing around the edge. What you need is a guy who can win one-on-one pass rush matchups, because most of the time they're going to send the center towards the tight end. So, like, you know, and look, Pernell McPhee is going to get a whole lot of attention regardless, because he's just that good of a player. So that guy across from him usually is going to get that one-on-one matchup. Shaq Lawson is a guy that can win. Okay. It doesn't really matter to me that he doesn't win around the edge quite as much as you would think he would with the 4.6 or whatever he ran. But he's a natural pass rusher. There's some guys who they have to learn the moves and stuff, right? And they have to be perfect with their hands in order to win. Shaq Lawson is more of a guy who probably the first time they put him at defensive end and let him rush was good at it, right? Now he's added some technique to help him get better at it, but you can just tell, man, he's so fluid. He understands the level of the quarterback. You rarely see him, like, you know, rushing 10 yards behind the quarterback. He usually shuts it down and hits you with some kind of inside rush. And he's one of the few guys I've seen this particular draft class who has a really good spin move to kind of play off of his speed rush anyway. So I've seen him do some power rushes. He's very well-rounded and mature as a pass rusher, is what I would say. And so I don't necessarily think that that's a huge need for your defense, quite honestly. But if they were looking for an edge rusher, they could do a lot worse than get Shaq Lawson. That guy is going to win a lot across if he's across from Pernell McPhee.
Yeah, that's a great point. And what's interesting, I don't think you have not broken down Kevin Dodd yet, correct?
Well, I have, but y'all haven't seen it yet.
You got that one hiding. Because, well, I don't know if you want to give us a sneak preview, but it seemed like certainly Shaq Lawson got a lot more double teams than Kevin Dodd got, and has more in his pass rush arsenal than Dodd has in terms of the different moves he can use. Did you see that as well?
Absolutely. I saw the same thing. Dodd is more of a little bit more raw as a prospect, doesn't have nearly as many moves. The move he does have is really good, though. I give him that. He does his swiper move, and it's pretty effective. I give him that. But the funny thing is, I'd already done Shaq Lawson's breakdown, of course, and I was working on Kevin Dodd's a couple of days ago. And it's hard, man, not to notice Shaq Lawson, even when you're looking at everybody else.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm looking at Kevin Dodd make a move, and it looks like he's about to get the sack. Before he can get there, here's Shaq Lawson again. And you just keep hearing, I'm watching with the sound, so I'm hearing the commentators too, and they can't stop talking about Shaq Lawson. So he's a guy that kind of commands your attention in Shaq Lawson. Kevin Dodd, on the other hand, is a very good prospect as well. He's a guy because maybe he doesn't have the best technique yet. You say his ceiling is a little bit higher than what you see on tape, because once he gets that technique to go with the athletic ability he's shown making those plays, then he's potentially going to be even better as a pass rusher. I do think he has to he has to find a way to get at least something to complement his speed rush, you know, his swiper move. But even if he doesn't for a while, I think he's going to be a guy that can make plays. He's tall. He's 6'5", 277. And I think he probably has some scheme versatility where he could play left defensive end. He could play outside linebacker in a 3-4. And a lot of teams are looking for a guy like him who is a little bit diverse that way. You know, just in case, who knows, in a couple of years they might fire the coaching staff and go to a 4-3 from a 3-4. You kind of want guys who, if you make a scheme upheaval like that, will still be able to make plays for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And all right, last player for you, Steve, Leonard Floyd. And he's a guy that when I first saw him mocked the Bears, I was kind of surprised. And we've talked about this outside linebacker, quote-unquote, need for the Bears, which is it's a bit of a luxury right now. But Lamar and Houston and Willie Young, their contract situations aren't cemented past this season, so they could be looking in the future. John Fox has talked about increasing team speed, and I think it's gotten a lot of people's minds. So then that's where Leonard Floyd comes in. And you kind of called him the jack of all trades, master of none, kind of player. Where do you see him fitting best in the NFL with his skill set? What was kind of your scouting report on Leonard Floyd?
Well, I think you want him as an outside linebacker in a 3-4 is the preferred place that you want him. He probably could be maybe a right defensive end also, but he's a little light for that. But he's a very athletic guy, man. That's the thing that kind of stands out to you is his athleticism. You know, he's not just a defensive end who can drop sometimes. He looked good dropping all over the field. I'm talking about deep passes and all. So he's a legitimate linebacker. He can play linebacker. It's just that, and I don't know if it was coaching or what have you, but it seemed like they moved him so many different places that he never got really good at any one thing. So I can see him, look, I think he ran like a 4.6 flat or something like that. Long arms, tall guy. I could see him if they just put him at defensive end, for instance, right defensive end, and let him rush. All we want you to do is get up the field and rush. I could see him getting really good at that. Or if they tell him, look, we're going to play you at wheel linebacker in a 4-3, and they just let him play wheel linebacker, he could be good at that. But for right now, I'm not exactly sure what he does best, because he's pretty good at a lot of things, but not really great at any one thing. So for me, if I'm a team, I want him just to be a pass rusher. Let's use that speed. Let's use that length. He does have a nice little inside move. He's kind of he's a slippery guy, is what I would say about him. You know, the move doesn't necessarily look great, but then all of a sudden he's sliding by the offensive tackle and getting pressure on the quarterback. So I think he has value there as an edge rusher, but I'm a little bit worried that a team will get him and then not quite know where to put him. For y'all, obviously, I do think he would definitely be an edge rusher for the Bears, but you're going to have to be patient with him. Quite honestly, any team that gets him has to understand that he's a long-term project. You're going to have to teach him more pass rush moves. You're going to have to teach him about staying low and getting off the football, because he's, you know, played a lot standing up. He hasn't really played with his hand in the dirt a whole lot. That's going to be a process. So to me, he's a little bit more of a long-term guy, a little bit more of a risk. A lot of high reward, but there's a lot of risk inherent with taking Leonard Floyd. So he is a guy that would make me nervous if you took him that high in the draft. But I think you'll find somewhere for him to play where he'll be decent. I just don't think, you know, if you take him that high, I don't think he's ever going to be the superstar that fans are expecting, especially like you said, nowadays when fans, you can't please them anyway.
Exactly. And Bears fans specifically have horror stories and nightmares of the last time they took a pure edge rusher in the first round, and that guy was Shea McClellan. Who didn't really work
exactly.
out.
And exactly.
Now, granted, there were some coaching staff issues there. As you mentioned, there's a long process to this. They put him at some different positions he wasn't fit at. But, that's what happens with the draft. All right, Steve, before we let you go, I got to ask you, you played 9 games in your career against the Bears. I checked the Pro Football Reference. And you notched 3.5 sacks against the Bears, which is kind of good. But when we're talking late 90s, early 2000s Bears, it's not, I mean, come on. But still, we'll give you your props. And I got to ask if you have any favorite memories playing against the Bears or any of your times ever at Soldier Field.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is an easy one. In 1999, when we actually ended up making it all the way to the NFC Championship game, that was actually the one year out of my whole career where I was a starter. I was named the starter, won the job in the preseason, and then ended up, we played y'all, the Bears, last game of the season to win the division. And I'm not even sure when the Buccaneers had won the division before that. Like, it had been so long. So we go up there and we win the game. I had a sack in that game, and I think I actually had a fumble recovery as well. So that's easily my best memory playing the Bears in my time with the Buccaneers.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. Stephen White, former NFL player, SB Nation blogger, also is on their podcast there. He's been writing awesome breakdowns. We now know Kevin Dodd's coming up next. Also some good receiver stuff up there at SB Nation. Steve, follow him on Twitter at SGW94. Steve, thanks so much. We really appreciate the time. And thanks for doing all these previews that we can read. And we're happy for you, as we are for ourselves, that it's almost over. And we can start talking about real players being on real teams because they've been drafted.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
All right, thank you. So, again, Steve White, just that was awesome. And that's kind of what we were looking for, because we've talked to some media guys about the draft and some of the guys the Bears are looking at, but he got into the nuts and bolts. And John Solly, I wrote this down on my phone in the middle of the podcast, and I showed it to Dan Mott. That was football porn is what that was. The way he breaks down the players is awesome, because – I thought the Shaq Lawson one really stood out, because I watched Shaq Lawson. I made my own notes about it. That's on our website, chicagofootball.com. And I've read some scouting reports about him. But he brings up just some the nuances that people that didn't play the game really might not notice. And it was just great insight into some of these players.
And I'm a little higher on Shaq Lawson after listening to him.
Absolutely. You have to be.
Yeah. I really kind of like it. I'm a little down on Leonard. I was a little worried about Leonard Floyd before,
yeah.
And now I'm really worried that the Bears are going to take Leonard
Floyd. You know, I watched Leonard Floyd this morning, and he's kind of the last guy I was going to break down, because I keep seeing him in these mocks, and it's kind of surprised me. And certainly the way he talked about Lawson now would really surprise me if they went Floyd over Lawson.
If both those guys are on the board,
they're looking for a 3-4 outside guy. Now, I still see some McPhee and Lawson, which makes me wonder if that, you know, if they really want someone that different. But if they want someone that different who's just going to be a pure speed guy, you can find one of those guys later in the draft, too. I mean, there are going to be options there. But A'shaun Robinson, too, I think that should hopefully put some Bears fans' worries at ease if they take A'shaun at 11. The way, again, Stephen White played defensive end. You know, this was his position in the NFL, and he was pretty successful against the Bears. So great stuff from him. Again, go follow his stuff on Twitter. We're going to wrap up in a few minutes here, but I want to go through my 7-round mock draft for you. But before we do that, I do want to tell you about our new sponsor, Loot Crate. They've themed mystery crates for gamers, geeks, and fans of pop culture each month, delivered right to your doorstep, cool and often exclusive items like collectibles, t-shirts, you get a t-shirt in every crate, gadgets, and more. For example, March, the theme was Versus. With the Batman vs. Superman stuff going on, there was a cool Batman vs. Superman item in that crate. They don't want to give it away. You should go get the crate. $45 value in each one. I'm a huge Batman and Superman fan. I'm still kind of on the fence about the Batman vs. Superman situation, but I do like them both individually, so I'm kind of coming around to it. My sister's been really, like, explaining the politics of them going off against each other, so I should probably get more into it and get more into these items at Loot Crate. Again, $45 value in every crate, and you get $3 off your first crate if you use our promo code SHAW, S-H-A-W. Go to lootcrate.com/SHAW, S-H-A-W, $3 off your first crate at lootcrate.com. Thanks to them for sponsoring us. All right, Pro Football Weekly's Chicago Bears 2016 7-round mock draft. I promise this won't take as long as the actual draft.
I'm so excited.
I have the Bears taking Ezekiel Elliott, round one, 11th pick overall. A lot of things have to happen for this to actually work. And the Bears also have to want Ezekiel Elliott if he's there at 11, as opposed to maybe guys we've talked about in this podcast, a Shaq Lawson, A'shaun Robinson, if they're there. But I just keep thinking the three quarterbacks are going to go, and there's a possibility Elliott's there, and I it'd be tough for the Bears to ignore him.
So we're assuming Buckner is off the board with this
yes,
pick.
No, yeah. I think, I mean, if again, the obviously the elephant in the room here is that the Bears' draft board can be completely different than ours. But I would imagine if it's Buckner versus Elliott, they would take Buckner. That'd be a good problem for them to have. But I'm thinking Buckner's off the board, three quarterbacks are gone, which has knocked Elliott down. So it would be Elliott over an A'shaun Robinson or a Shaq Lawson or a Jack Conklin. So that would be...
If Elliott's gone, do they still go running back?
Well, in my mock draft, they took him, Dan.
But yeah, his mock draft.
Yeah. No, I think if so, one of the other things I toyed with this mock was them taking A'shaun Robinson first and then taking Kenneth Dixon, the running back we talked about last week from Louisiana Tech, in the second round. Let's go to the second round pick number 41. They go to the defensive line, Mississippi State's Chris Jones. I'm starting to worry he's not going to be there at 41. So this pick might not work out, but he's got the size. I think the scouting reports are questioning his consistency. That's something that Vic Fangio will fix. Vic
Definitely.
Fangio can fix that. All right, let's go to third round, race through these. They go to the secondary, Northern Iowa cornerback slash safety, DeAndre Hall, slash safety. That way the Bears can put him at either one or both at the same time.
I like it. I like Hall as a third round guy. I hope he's there.
Well, the problem with this mock, I got three small school guys, and Ryan Pace drafted zero small school guys last year. So, kind of leap of faith. I have them taking a quarterback with their first fourth round pick, Stanford's Kevin Hogan. There could be a run on quarterbacks in the second or third round, in which Hogan might be gone at this point. But just the fact that I think in terms of what you're looking for out of a developmental backup, he has a lot of the traits. He's accurate, knows the game, pro-style offense at Stanford. Seems to make a lot of sense.
Are you worried at all about Hogan's kind of funky release? I think as people have gotten more into these mid-round quarterbacks, that's the criticism on Hogan.
Dak Prescott's also got a funky release.
Yes,
he's the other guy I like in the mid-round. Jacoby Brissett's got one. You know, a lot of these guys, they're not going to have the clean release, and that's why I lean towards Hogan as one, because you can put up with a weird release if he's the type of guy you can work with. And he was pretty accurate at Stanford, too. All right, their second fourth-round pick, they do go tackle here. They take Joe Haig out of North Dakota State. Love the size there and the arm length. And you got to get a depth of tackle. You know, if you're going to – so this mock draft assumes they don't take one in the first. They go with Charles Leno. You got to get a backup. Why not take the guy that protected Carson Wentz the last few years? We talked about with Steve White, outside linebackers finding speed. Washington's Travis Feeney in the fifth round. Great combine for Feeney. He's got some question marks about his durability, but 4.5 40 and 17.5 tackles for loss last season, you can throw him in there on special teams. Sixth round pick, Northwestern defensive lineman Dean Lowry. Go Cats.
Go Cats.
But look, he's a five technique. He's from the area. 6'6", 290, you know, can play it a little over 300, 304 pounds. I think he's weighed in at before. He was very productive at Northwestern. So, that's an option for them. He would be an interesting pick for them in the later rounds. They have a second sixth-round pick, another corner, DJ White out of Georgia Tech. When you look at corners, you're looking at guys who have length, in the 6 foot, 6'1 range. And, again, you just need depth there, special teams. And then seventh-round pick, they got to get a tight end somewhere. So I waited till the seventh round because I feel like they're going to – I don't believe necessarily in reaching for a guy at a tight end when you're looking at a number two. Darian Griswold, an intriguing guy to Arkansas State, another small school player, athletic, moved from Shrine Game to Senior Bowl because he really impressed scouts in St. Petersburg, got to play in the Senior Bowl Mobile, athletic player, developmental. You can work him into the process there for the Bears. So those are my nine picks, seven-round Bears mock draft. I expect zero of those to be correct. Last year, I think of my I did three of these. I didn't want to do that because they have nine picks this year. I think I went 0 for 18, believe it or not. No, that's not true. One of my mocks, I did do Kevin White, but that's kind of easy. It's pretty hard to not do Kevin White in any of your mock drafts last year. I have much more on this specific mock draft. Check it out, chicagofootball.com, and you can see some of the explanations to some of these picks. All right, let's close up shop here on our final pre-draft show of the Chicago Football Podcast. First off, my thank yous are to Stephen White, SB Nation writer, follow him on Twitter at SGW94 for spending time breaking down these prospects. And hopefully you guys all learned a lot more about some of these Bears targets. I know that I did. My producers, Dan Mott and John Sally, thank you to you guys. Some plugs for you, of course. John Sally, great fantasy podcast this week, comparing Sam Hinkie's resignation letter to fantasy football. Give that a listen. The Pro Football Weekly podcast from this past week, Nate Atkins talked to Brady Quinn, former Cleveland Browns quarterback. Really good insight into what this last week is like for players about to get drafted and the quarterback class. Go check out all of our Shaw Media podcasts as well in the Shaw Media Network at Blog Talk Radio. And this week, I will be at Halas Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Hub will be on the score at 670 all weekend. Arthur and Nate will be at the draft in Chicago at the Auditorium Theater. And Saturday night, 7 p.m. on WCIU, we have a live show, Chicago Football Now, breaking down the Bears draft class. We have so much wall-to-wall coverage all weekend long at ProFootballWeekly.com. Be sure to follow all the Bears coverage at Bears_Insider on Twitter. Thanks so much for putting up with all of our rampant speculation the past few weeks. And get ready for the draft and see who the next Chicago Bears will be. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everyone. This is Hub Arkush, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, and I'm here to let you know that Pro Football Weekly is back. To celebrate, we're giving away a collector's edition hoodie a day for the next 60 days. Just go to profootballweekly.com/hoodie, enter your email, and if you've won, we'll email you right back. While you're there, check out the site. You want an insider's guide to the NFL? Go to profootballweekly.com for all the news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Pro Football Weekly, the best coverage in the NFL since 1967.